First joining me is Dr. Georgios Samaras, Professor of Public Policy at King's College London, specialising in the communications and mobilisation of far-right groups. Very good afternoon to you, Dr. Samaras. Thank you for joining me. How worried should we be about the rise of the far-right in the UK?
Lovely to join you. I think that the scenes that unfolded yesterday in Parliament Square were quite concerning. The political landscape currently in the UK closely mirrors the broader European context, and far-right parties continue to gain traction. We can see that with Reform, we can see it with French far-right movements, largely to the mainstreaming and normalizing of those ideologies. So Tommy Robinson's Islamophobia is a significant component of that, when the British far-right actually tries to capitalize on the situation related to Gaza, to pro-Palestinian protests. We should be worried primarily because those anti-Muslim sentiments seem to dominate this rhetoric, and there's no allies in mainstream political parties right now. Nobody's talking about Islamophobia. Nobody's trying basically to dispute the fact that this rhetoric should be banned. When 5,000 far-right thugs, sorry to refer to them like that, but they are thugs, marching in central London, that is a very, very worrying, I would say, development.
Can I just pick up on one point? You mentioned far-right in the context of the Reform Party. They would not say they're far-right at all. They would say that they have certain concerns around certain issues, and they would take a great exception to that characterization. Do you think, Dr. Samaras, that there is a danger in some of the use of this terminology, that the term far-right is bandied about quite liberally, and that then it loses its value, it becomes devalued, because people fail to make the distinction between actual hardcore far-right people who are very anti-immigrant and racist in many ways and want to have people repatriated, and those who simply are calling for an assertion of culture as they see it here, and also control of immigration? Do you think that there's a distinction between the two?
Personally, I think that by masking those ideologies or mislabeling them, we basically enable them. And normalizing some of those under ideologies means that we are technically blurring the ideological lines between political parties. Similarly, like you highlighted the example of our Reform, look at Giorgia Meloni. She currently self-identifies as a central-right politician, despite her neo-fascist roots linked to Mussolini's party. That exemplifies the extent of this ideological blurring. So it's quite unprecedented and concerning that such claims often go unchallenged. We can't really let that happen. We need to continue labeling the parties based on the ideological understanding, again, of politics. Look at Reform, look at xenophobia, look at Islamophobia. There is Islamophobia, and that has absolutely no place in mainstream politics or the center. So I don't see a reason why mislabeling any of those parties is going to help us understand more or approach their voters. I think we should call them out whenever we have the option.
How well are these right-wing parties that have been characterized in this way doing across Europe?
So, as you can see now, the phenomenon is not isolated in just countries like France or Spain or Italy. There is a wider trend. Italy under Giorgia Meloni, of course, and Brothers of Italy. France, potentially under Marine Le Pen, and of course, Hungary under Viktor Orban. They're all promoting authoritarian policies that emphasize xenophobia and Islamophobia. And that, of course, has become a very popular practice because it results in stoking fears about migration. They're effective for now. And based on the projections and the upcoming EU election, approximately 25 to 30% of the seats in the European Parliament will basically go to far-right parties. That is hype. There is a lot of hype. Same thing applies to smaller countries like Greece, where currently four far-right parties are polling above 3% in a week before the European election. So it's quite a critical test for both the European Parliament and these parties. They're pulling well, and based on the negotiations between European Parliament groups, we will see whether they will have a chance to shape public policy. I would say that the far right, for the first time, has a protagonistic role in European politics, and that is very worrying.
Do you think that these right-wing parties in Western nations, particularly in the EU, have been really clear about articulating what values they are trying to champion and what Western values actually are that people from other states who come, particularly via immigration, the immigration route, are actually meant to be assimilating into? Do you think it's clear to the immigrant what they are actually trying to assimilate into?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. Also, when a political party on the right tries to use great replacement theory to emphasize some dangers from migration, we can see that there is a very specific goal here to promote Islamophobia.
Why is that? Can you explain why?
It's because it's, I think, quite easy after the European crisis and also the migration crisis that started in 2014. To promote white purity after seeing large parts of the population from Middle Eastern countries moving to Europe. So we didn't really discuss what happened back then and how important that aspect of migration was. So a lot of people who saw the rise of migration during those years in Europe, they never really understood its meaning. So without a proper education, without a proper understanding of the migration context, people end up believing in conspiracy theories such as great replacement theory. We can see that also in
And the great replacement theory, just to be clear, is what? The theory that the birth rate will be much higher amongst immigrant populations and they will eventually outnumber the so-called inverted commas indigenous population. But isn't it true that the birth rate of some immigrant communities is much higher than the indigenous population? Is that not just a fact?
Yes, but it's a conspiracy theory that promotes the idea that the white population will be replaced.
But why is it a conspiracy if it's a fact that the birth rate is much, much higher? Why is that a conspiracy?
It is a conspiracy theory because there is no evidence that there is a plan of that happening.
It's not a plan, but it's just a fact.
But the great replacement theory basically highlights that there is a government plan.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, I would agree with you that there's no plan. But if people are genuinely worried about the fact that the birth rate is much, much higher amongst some immigrant communities, do you think that that is a cause for legitimate concern, or is this all being whipped up into a frenzy?
I think that it's shenanigans. There is absolutely no reason to deny the fact that in a globalized world, this is going to happen. When Europe went through a massive economic crisis over the past 20 years, many countries almost faced, like Greece, for example, total bankruptcy. So the question is how we could improve the quality of life in some of those countries. Instead of having governments promoting socialist measures to tackle the effects of the economic crisis, we have seen governments basically relying on austerity. When the lives of people have been impacted, of course they're going to rely on conspiracy theories to try and soothe that kind of pain. It works. And right-wing parties, even in the mainstream right now, are trying to capitalize on this by technically embracing those conspiracy theories. So the great replacement theory has become the norm, even in central-right parties right now.
Okay. Thank you very much indeed. That was Dr. Georgios Samaras.